You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, Matthew Penny is back for the first time. Has it been 2 weeks, Penny?
2 weeks, which is a week longer than we normally go or have gone lately.
Yeah, the NBA season started last week and we just wanted to, you know, give the NBA its time that it needs because, you know, Penny watches a lot of NBA, but it's not quite as much as necessarily I do because I'm like double and triple screening games every single night.
It's hard to keep up with you. I start reading the tweets and I'm like, well, that's one game, and then two tweets later is another. I text you at one point, I said, how many games are you watching right now? Because I'm struggling with one and a half, two. I need to see the kind of screen setup over there in Australia.
Yeah, I've got the iPad, the monitor, and the computer screen all set up with games, basically. So you do the triple screen. I need to get a TV in the office. Unfortunately, retail has not been open for me to go and buy a TV for the office over here in Australia. Once that happens, we're gonna be glorious, Penny. There's gonna be a nice TV in the corner. I'm gonna have a monitor. I'm going to be able to actually work while I watch games because I feel like I haven't been able to do that. I'm more just like tweeting. This is going to be a great little office setup here.
It sounds like you got to figure it out. So you can't even have anything shipped to your place right now? Like everything's just totally shut down?
I can. So it opens up at 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Oh.
Here. And you better believe Laura and I are going to be at the mall ready to buy things because look, like they're just random things we need for the house. Like it's not like, oh yeah, we just want to go and be like gluttonous and go shopping. Like look, we absolutely want to go shopping because we haven't been able to in 2 months, but like we actually have like a house to fill and we need random things. Like there's like small things and there are big things. Like I won't talk about like big things we need, but like one of the small things we realized we didn't have is like, we don't have a butter dish, and
in my head, I played out that you were going to say pizza cutter. So, butter dish is kind of in that same family a little bit.
Yeah, we actually did go get a pizza cutter pretty early because we eat enough pizza, but, like, we realized, like, we're just kind of trying to spread cold butter on toast, and it's impossible.
First world problems. It's like back in the day when you go wait in line overnight at Best Buy for like Grand Theft Auto 4. That's what I'm envisioning you for your butter dish. Just wait in the line with everybody else.
We live very close to a mall, like within like a 5-minute walk of like an enormous shopping center mall kind of thing. And we know we're going to need the car. I'm like telling Laura, so do we go and just like drop off the car at 3 o'clock and then like walk home and continue our workday? That way we know we'll be able to actually park mall.
That's smart.
Is that the move here?
The move is you're going to end up with so many things you don't need and think you do because you're going to get so excited. It's like, throw that in. The stores are smart when they kind of have the end caps and they're checking out all those like little items at the end. Like, I didn't think I needed a big thing of caramel popcorn, but I think I'm going to throw that in here for the time being, too.
Well, Laura and I are not eating bad food right now. You and I have talked about this, but I'm down a solid 21 pounds right now.
Wow.
Over the last 2 months. And I'm down to like an actual respectable weight now. It's not that I was heavily overweight before, because I tend to carry weight reasonably well, but needed to make some life changes in the pandemic in order to not be obese by the time the pandemic ended, let's say.
Yeah, you just lost sight of the ball during all the relentless draft coverage we did over the last 12 months, and now the NBA, you're back in fighting shape. I like it. It's good. You gotta keep going.
Yeah, no. Now, I needed to, like, create a rhythm, like, once we, like, got this new house. Like, I needed to figure out, okay, this is what I need to do. This is how I need to, like, handle things in order to not... not just feel like my body is about to collapse on me.
Well, then you'll have another TV screen soon, so that extra screen can be some online workout classes while you watch five other NBA games and try to keep up with all the comings and goings that you've covered throughout the last few weeks here in the meantime, and kind of push me a little bit to watch more NBA and take more notes on these rookies and previously college players and international guys that have elevated and graduated on to the big show and not our amateur ranks that we covered before.
Yeah, and you've watched a lot of NBA now. Like, now that we're, what, 9 days into the season, like, you've caught enough to where you feel pretty good about where you're at in terms of where the rookies are in terms of tape, right?
I have. It sort of happened organically in that I was watching a lot of guys and taking notes, and you sent sort of a cryptic text message like, you watch much of the NBA? I'm like, I think I know what he's getting at here. And then I just had to play catch up a little bit, thank God, to Synergy. I don't know what I would do without you, because watching in real time is great, but I don't have the same time allowance that some do, that you do. So to be able to go back and brush up on a couple teams I missed, it's been very, very helpful. So I've through about 4 or 5 games here, I've seen all the guys we're about to talk about. Still a few more rookies to cover, but I feel pretty comfortable where we're at right now.
Yeah, the the having children thing really does probably yes. create some issues, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you just asked me, like, hey, have you watched the first half of the Magic game? It's like, dude, I was watching dinosaur yoga downstairs and just trying to survive, trying to get to the recording time here. So, no, not yet.
Well, I mean, Penny, you are talking to the foremost expert in Orlando Magic basketball. Perfect. Right now, because I have watched every minute the Orlando Magic have played this year, and it's not like a purposeful thing. I watched their first 2 games because I did really want to watch them, and then the third game was the game they won against the Knicks. I bet on the Knicks in that game, so I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this game. And then the fourth game was against the Heat, and it just happened to be that the Heat was one of 2 teams that I just hadn't seen yet and needed to get eyes on at a certain point. And then the fifth game here is Charlotte, and I don't know how much of the Hornets you've watched, but they are one of the 5 most watchable teams in the NBA because they don't play defense. They have no interior defense. They're so fun offensively because LaMelo Ball is just like wheeling and dealing, and they're running and gunning, and they have so many offensive creators between LaMelo and Gordon Hayward, and even like Kelly Oubre is like threatening on offense, right? Ish Smith, like they're Miles Bridges has obviously been phenomenal so far this year. He's averaging 25 points a game in the first 4 games. So they're a really, really fun team. And I'm just like, okay, this is the first game of the night. Why wouldn't I just pop it on, right?
I saw them lose to Celtics. We broke their undefeated streak in double overtime, I believe it was. And yeah, I echo what you're saying too. Like LaMelo just catching the ball and casually whipping it full court with his offhand for a layup, then coming back, and the way he kind of pulls up off screens, and even when they call timeouts and he gets that like sneaky extra shot in from like 37 feet, it's a show. It's a watch.
It's a show. Yeah. That's a great way to put the Charlotte Hornet experience. It's a show. We're going to spend today though talking about rookies, and I've like kind of sort of held off on a lot of my like takes on the rookie class throughout my tweets, because I knew that we were going to do something like this. So I figured that we would just hold takes until then, right? And the first place that I want to start is just simply, it feels like to me that this rookie class is awesome. I've really not only enjoyed this class, but I have really felt like there are more difference makers in this class than what there has been previously between Evan Mobley, you know, Chris Duarte, Scotty Barnes has been good. Franz Wagner has actually been pretty good, despite the fact the Magic are pretty bad. Josh Giddey's been good. Like, you can go kind of up and down the list, and you find a lot of players who are legitimately in rotations and playing fun roles. And yeah, sure, that happens every year, like Emmanuel Quickley and Sadiq Bey and Anthony Edwards and LaMelo Ball obviously emerged last year, but this year feels like a bit more productive and enjoyable to watch to me.
It's strong at the top, and we still haven't seen Cade Cunningham, who's been hurt. Jonathan Kuminga's been hurt. And then throughout, there's still depth. Jeremiah Robinson-Earl has started. Herb Jones has started. There's guys that we like sort of in the process, and I didn't think they'd be starting game 4 or 5, but they've already asserted themselves as being these difference makers. I do want to preface a little bit, because I was talking with a friend in NBA circles prepping for this and trying to get some intel aside from just what we watch and what we see. And I said, tell me something negative, because everything's positive right now in these guys. And the negative was, it's been 4 games. You guys are doing this already. I said, yeah, we are. I mean, we're excited. It's kind of like more of a progress report in school than a report card.
Yeah, no, we're not overreacting. And look at Matt Penny asking for the negatives.
I need a negative spin. If I can't find it, I'm like, give me something that I can hook my cart to here. But it has been good to watch and to see guys that, even with a little bit of hesitation at the top, have really produced statistically too. And one of the fun things is you've seen a lot of players kind of like outside their comfort zones too, and I didn't know that they could really do some of the things, and we'll get into specifics, but that's kind of given me pause as to what do I have to change in my own personal evaluation process to not miss some of these things. And what I've learned early, despite it being 2 weeks, is you are going to miss. It's just, are you missing big or missing small on some of these?
So let's start on who I think has clearly been the best rookie. Do you think there's been like a clear best rookie in the NBA so far?
You're setting me up. As like a surefire number one, I don't, because I think that you could say one of probably 4 names and I would agree with you.
So I don't mean in terms of long term. I just mean in terms of the way this guy has played through 4 games. And, you know, that can be, you know, an older player. It can be a younger player. I'm just saying in terms of like pure production so far. Like, I think that this one guy has just been really freaking good so far.
I'm guessing you're going Evan Mobley.
I think Evan Mobley's been incredible for Cleveland. I am so blown away by what he's looked like defensively. I thought it was going to be a bigger adjustment for him, and I think there probably will be a bit of an adjustment at some point for him physically. You look at some of the teams he's played, like he played Memphis in game 1 and, you know, got to chase around Jaren. Like, that is helpful to him, right? He got to play Charlotte. Charlotte just does not have any depth in the front court. He got to play Atlanta. Got to chase around John Collins. Got to play Denver. Denver, again, got to chase around Michael Porter Jr., right? These teams that have bigger bodies, I think, are going to give him problems, like stronger players. And to be honest, like, I felt like someone, when he got matched up with Aaron Gordon in that Denver game on occasion, I thought that Aaron Gordon's physicality even gave him some problems from time to time. But for the most part, he has just been so exceptional at moving his feet defensively. He's cleaning up for every single possible miscue. And this team has a lot of miscues defensively, because out on the top, they have guys like Colin Sexton, who can't stay in front of anyone. And they have Darius Garland, who is small, and he's only played half of their game so far. But he's another smaller guy who isn't great defensively on the ball. And then in the front court with him, they have Lauri Markkanen and Jarrett Allen. Allen, I think, has been a little bit better in terms of moving his feet this year than what he's shown in the past. I still don't love him as a rim protector for what the role that Cleveland needs him to play is. But Laurie Markkinen just gets like tanked every time. Oh, like he just gets blown by every single time he's on an island.
You're rolling out that big three. I was taken aback when they're saying, yeah, the stars are Laurie Markkinen, Jared Allen, and Evan Mobley. I said, that is a big three lineup. Not necessarily what I'd say is a traditional big three, but it's different. And it starts with the defense. He's all over the place, and it's an asset by no
means.
So like the switches, it's not a liability. It's not like, ah, crap, he's switched, he's in space. He's great, and he has that enthusiasm still to challenge a bunch of shots. I saw a tweet. I think he's leading the league in challenge shots and altered shots, and then he crashes the glass, and he takes off and runs in transition. And I mean as a compliment, I don't know if he knows any better yet. He's just like, I'm going to empty my tank every time I'm out there. Whereas you play with some veterans, they'll challenge. They won't go as hard. It's more of a pace thing. He's going a million miles per hour right now, which is great, and it's helping what they've done. And then on offense, he's been given so much freedom to explore his game, especially from the perimeter. It, almost in a way how USC used him in that attacking dribble handoff stuff during the Pac-12. And, and then he's used as a short roller, as a roll man, as a popper, and they exploit those mismatches while, like, Markkinen will screen his man down low, then Mobley comes up for a high ball screen. It's sort of like a scramble. He has really good footwork, and then it forces the defense to make a decision. So it's hard because I'm trying to figure out if the three-point thing ever comes around. If it does, like, forget about it because everything else has kind of pieced its way together. But as we alluded to earlier, I didn't know what to do with him in the draft, and I sort of early feel like an idiot for having a fourth, but I don't know how to reshape my philosophy. And what I mean by that is he did a lot at USC, but there were holes. Like, he didn't have a field goal attempt in a game. He didn't always go full takeover mode. He could be lost for long stretches on offense. And then you go back to USA basketball, like, he had some back spasm issues, but there's kind of whispers. Is he tough enough? How can I recalibrate the evaluation process now to rebalance some of these factors, knowing I'm not going to be 100%, and maybe he is the fourth guy, and after Suggs and Green, they've started to turn the corner a little bit, but how do I get closer to not missing on a guy like this?
Well, I think the thing that Evan did really well, and that Evan just has in comparison to other bigs, is tremendous flexibility and coordination. He's not a traditional big. He's just not like your typical 7-footer. And we knew that pre-draft. Like, this is not something, this is something we talked about, right? We talked about the bend that he plays with. We talked about his skill level as a passer and ball handler, particularly. He is capable of playing some four. I still am of the firm belief that his best role will be as a five long term. Right. He is going to get up to 235 pounds in all likelihood, and he is going to be just so – that's where he's going to get his best marginal advantage. He can play the four, and they can keep playing him at the four right now and play him at the three defensively at times, right? He's mobile enough to do that, to be sure. But where you're going to get the most out of him marginally – is taking advantage of mismatches against fives, I think, because at some point he's going to be big and strong enough to deal with fives while also being athletic enough to just, you know, slide around and beat them off the bounce offensively. So I am very intrigued by the combination of skills so far. I will say one place where I think he's a little bit ahead is, and I think this is something that I misjudged from both of the bigger ball handlers who have a chance to be like legitimate ball handlers in this class, in Evan Mobley and Scottie Barnes. The space of the NBA court has helped both of these guys so much. And maybe we can go to Scottie Barnes next, 'cause I think Scottie's been really good so far. But the space of the NBA court in comparison to the college court, where because these guys are so big and because the college court is so condensed, they end up just taking up so much space on the court, right?
Totally.
Like, they end up just being so big and long that it takes them like two strides to get to the basket from the perimeter. That can be an advantage sometimes, but it can also be a hindrance when teams are playing this like very condensed zone offense, right? And what we're seeing so far with Evan Mobley, when he's like denying dribble handoffs and driving from the top of the key and finishing at the rim or getting the ball in the mid post and taking a stride and scoring, it's just harder to recover in the NBA than it is in college because the space is so much wider. There's so much more space in that mid-range area to operate. And Evan Mobley has taken full advantage of that. I think Cleveland and JB Bickerstaff have taken full advantage of that in a really interesting way.
Yeah. The last kind of point I'll say on Mobley before we transition here is that I'm with you on he's probably best suited as a five, and he has that lack of size up front and through his shoulders right now, but it doesn't really scare him away from going up in the dunker spot when he's there. And it was funny a bit to see the contrast in size and in styles when he had Jokic on him for some plays. And it's like these guys are just light years apart in their games, their body types, their approach. But it's like they're both effective in what they do. And I'm curious to see how Evan Mobley continues to sort of evolve. And Cleveland's not great right now, so he's able to do almost whatever he wants from that position because they need him to be well. But how is he able to capitalize on the things he does now and add it to winning basketball in the future?
Yeah, definitely agree with all of that. I'm trying to think what I guess that like the last thing I'll say on Mobley, I can't note enough how impressed I've been defensively with the way he's cleaned up mistakes. His ability to just be a menace in help, and as you said, to contest shots, he's just all over the place. Like, he is a legitimate, not just like plus defender, he's a very, very good NBA defender already. His instincts are just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, the timing is something you can't teach, and he clearly has that for his second jump as well.
Okay, let's take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to get to the rest of the class. Okay, we're back. I want to go to Scotty Barnes next because I've enjoyed Raptors fans like acting like I didn't have Scotty Barnes in the top seven of my rankings year.
Very similar feedback.
Like, I am such an enormous fan of Scotty Barnes, and people get frustrated because they see me, they see that I have said previously that he was a no level scorer on the ball in college, right? And by the way, that was accurate. What I think I misjudged with Scotty Barnes is similar to Evan Mobley. I misjudged how the effect of space would really impact him. He can definitely score at the rim in the NBA because he covers ground so quickly as a driver. I will also say, like, I think that Toronto is using him phenomenally. They're using his energy and athleticism and motor really, really well. They're using him as a weapon in the dunker spot. They're using him as a weapon on the offensive glass as a roller. They figured out really, really interesting ways to weaponize him that make him effective. They're obviously letting him grab and go as well out on the break, and I think that's really, really smart. Take advantage of where he's best, which is out in space, where he can use that length and athleticism to cover ground as quickly as he can. I think the jumper looks better,
right,
with Scotty Barnes for sure. It's cleaner. It has, like, there's a hitch that's gone kind of at the top, which is really, really important. Having said that, like, he has not really made shots at a level commensurate with where I think Toronto fans like have him making shots right now. He's like, I after their first three games, I went through and like did the numbers on the amount of shots that he's made in a Toronto Raptors uniform. So going summer league, preseason, and the first few NBA games so far, he's made 19 of 57 from outside of 10 feet.
Right.
thus far in his career. That's 33%. From a process perspective, it looks much better, and I'm very excited about Scottie Barnes from a future perspective, and he's been productive through offensive rebounding and transition already in a way that's been great to see. I don't know that I'm like, he has a chance to be like a top 15 player in the NBA level yet, but I think that there's a chance he could be like a top, you know, 30 player in the NBA and make an all-star game or two and look really good. I mean, I haven't watched any of their game against the Pacers tonight. He is 10 points on 5 of 11 shooting, and he's, you know, at halftime, and his, I can see on my timeline, looked pretty solid at least. So he's definitely a guy that you and I thought was going to be able to play early.
Yes.
For sure. Just because of the physicality, the athleticism, the motor, the defensive ability. But we also like just had like upside questions long term. And I think that that's where things continue to be at this point. We'll see what happens as he continues to shoot.
Yeah, I was clearly watching the Celtics game when he had 25 points, 13 rebounds, 11 for 17 from the floor. He hit a three. He hit a step-in jumper. I said, what have I done? You sent a tweet, and I want to put you on the spot because I know you tweet a lot. What was your tweet on his shot attempts? Because that was the first thing that stood out to me, is that I don't remember like ever really seeing him take 17 shots in a game outside of grassroots basketball. Because he played second or third fiddle at Mount Verde Academy because they had Moses Moody and Cade Cunningham and De'Ron Sharp and Caleb Houston, and then USA Basketball the same way.
The year before, though, like even think the year before when he was at university school, he was not the number one option. Yeah. Vernon Carey was. Like, he has probably not I'll give you the number. I mean, in his first two games, he took 13 and 17 shots. The most shots he took in a single game at Florida State last year was 13.
Yeah.
And I'll pull up the numbers. Yeah, like he had 12 in his third game against Dallas. He has 11 at halftime tonight against the Pacers.
But that's kind of like the craziness that I didn't know he had a lot of this offensive piece in him. And maybe so I sent a tweet about how he's one of the other guys I've just rethought. And I know it's early, but you shoot 27% from three at Florida State and 62% from the free throw line. Like, the indicators are there that, yeah, I don't know if like the jumper really comes around, but it has. Like, it looks more comfortable. I know the numbers aren't astronomical, but it looks more consistent. When he was left open at Florida State, it was like, okay, man, have at it. Now the jumper is somewhat respectable, that it's going to be close. It's less of a moon ball. Like, it still has arc, but it's not as like sky high, and he's missing more of the same way that he has. And the spacing of the NBA court has helped in those dribble handoffs he does and isolations, and it lets him get to his move without being packed in so often. And I think the energy plays into it as well, as he has a great nose for the ball on the offensive glass. So it goes up, he's there right away for second chance opportunities. Like Evan Mobley, they're just so full of energy right now, these rookies, that like you look twice and they're getting their second shot at them. Josh Giddey's the same way. You miss, he's right there. You still see like the best parts of Scottie Barnes too, in that he flashed one of those like lefty one hand full court advance passes in the game I watched with the Celtics. Yep. And it was like a miss, but it was like the fact that he had the gusto to throw that. And the role allocation, I was worried with the pick there with Toronto in my mind needing a guard and kind of having Pascal Siakam, who's been out, but they're playing him right now next to Precious Achiuwa, who's kind of someone in that mold. And Scottie sometimes will play like the five, and then others he's sort of bringing the ball up, so he's all over the court. And I remember someone in the front office said like, we want to play five guys like that, and their style actually says like they might try that. So it's been a lot. I want to see what it looks like when everyone else is healthy, but it's like we're seeing everything he did in the past, and then he's ejected with a booster shot of offensive game that hand up, like I didn't really see this coming.
Yeah, so in the case of Toronto, like wanting to play five guys like that, people keep like, I feel like nobody mentions them as a Ben Simmons like spot anymore.
Oh boy.
And I keep wondering if they are a Ben Simmons spot, because he literally would allow them to play five guys like that.
All right, yeah, I wish your command. Here's your point guard. Do you want another 6'9 guy? Yeah, here he is.
Like, you could play a Ben Simmons, Delano Banton, OG Anunoby, Precious Achiuwa, Scotty Barnes lineup.
Yeah, and
that is literally all guys that size.
And that's a fun lineup, too. Like, when they roll out Banton, and I forget, it was the coach or someone had a quote saying, like, we have to play him. Like, he needs minutes. He makes an impact out there.
Yeah, I'm a little bit less sold on, like, the Banton hive. But I understand why Toronto fans are excited, and I think that there's reason for, like, some optimism there, for sure. Because, like, the other thing that they could do is they could just, like, who would be the perfect point guard for Joel Embiid that isn't, like, an all-star point guard?
Are you say, our Lord and Savior Malachi Flynn? Or are you going to go deeper?
No, I'm saying Fred VanVleet.
Oh, okay. You could go that. I mean, they sort of re-signed a year ago, right? Like,
2 years ago, yeah. He's in his third. Right. This is his third year in that contract.
Second. I see it. I get it.
I'm just saying, like, that's like a real.
Man, you're going to. Like, see,
he fits that front office.
Raptors fans are already beating us up. They're going to have all these beat reporters pulling from this, saying you're encouraging a trade. This is just going to blow up.
But he fits that front office's MO. Like, they have the exact player that Philadelphia needs. Like, they're probably going to have to add more to Fred to get a deal done, just given where Daryl's price tag seems to be. But I'm just saying, like, I'm just kind of just throwing it out there. I think he's probably going to need a little bit more, but that's, you know, we'll see. I'm just throwing it out there.
It's ambitious, and it's a bizarre staring contest we're watching in real time too, so maybe that breaks it down a little bit.
I'm just connecting dots that, you know, maybe should be connected, maybe shouldn't be, maybe it's all dumb. I don't know. Just, this is what I do.
That's the fifth screen. The fifth screen is just conspiracy theories.
Yeah, it's me literally embodying the Charlie Day thing from It's Always Sunny. Yeah. This is me. Okay. Anything else on Scotty Barnes? I think Scotty's looked great. I'm really excited about what he's shown so far. I think he's going to be an awesome, awesome player that really, truly affects winning in the NBA because of his high basketball IQ, his motor, his toughness, his defensive ability, which is all stuff that you and I talked about pre-draft and we're very excited about with Scotty Barnes.
We are. I don't know if they're up right now, but 1-3. So you have to see if this type of also freedom will kind of contribute to wins. But everything he's done, he's been much more assertive, finding his own shot. So it's, I think I had him 7th. So it's not like I'm 70th, but maybe worthwhile of a few spots higher than that.
Okay. Let's go to Chris Duarte next, because Chris Duarte is the patron saint of the Game Theory podcast.
Yes.
If Poku is our Jesus figure, I would say that Chris Duarte has long been the source of affection on this show. We have loved Chris Duarte for a long time. Chris Duarte is averaging 20 points in his first four games in the NBA. I did not expect this.
Well, I didn't really either, but I think Chris Duarte is kind of like the first guy, and we go on here, we record, we say our takes, this one, and I remember when we recorded, and I was like, I don't know, man, Chris Duarte is better than the 40s. You're like, I know, right? Isn't, like, Duarte really good? So, like, that was the first, like, connective tissue type of player between the two of us. I say this as a compliment. He plays like he's 24 years old, right? Like, he's an older rookie. He's already had a handful of 20-plus point games. His first three games, he had 15 shots, 16 shots, 21 shots. And he hits his first couple, and then he acts like he's not going to miss. Like, he's hit multiple buzzer beaters to end quarters. I think he missed a game winner, but I'm okay with that because he has stones. Like, the shooting has translated immediately. You go under that screen, he's going to make you pay. Then he has that one dribble pull-up when he's chased off the line. And Pacers do a great job of running pin downs for him to free him up. And they look for him late in the shot clock, and he can fire from deep. The one thing that I don't really know yet if I've figured out is it seems like he's taking tougher shots in the NBA than he was at Oregon. Have you thought the same watching?
I don't think so. I think that Oregon used him a lot off of movement like that.
He's like clearing off guys overall, like 30 feet. He's like waving off guys like, no, I got it. I'm going to take like a 30-footer. Like that wouldn't happen unless you're like deep late in the game, the Pac-12 on the road against whatever, USC. It just seems like he's gotten into his bag earlier, and the confidence is just crazy, and I love seeing it. Like, it's a shot, he's high-fiving the bench, he's yelling. He's just like on that older path than some of the other younger rookies are.
Yeah, like it's hard because I feel like he showed all of those flashes.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It was just maybe not as consistent. Like, maybe his overall like shot difficulty is higher right now, because like he's taking more difficult shots. Like, he's taking difficult shots more often. Right. And look, like, Chris Duarte is going to be as good as his jumper takes him. Luckily enough, he's a 40% three-point shooter, like he has been throughout the course of his career. And I worry about what the rest of his game looks like offensively. Like, he's been a smart, like, piece of a cog passer, but hasn't necessarily been like a great passer so far. He's been not a great finisher inside. I think he struggled a little bit with that, but it doesn't matter because he is a terrific shooter who can shoot off of a variety of movement and get his shots off at volume at a high level. And on top of that, he is a legit defender who makes the right read, makes the right rotation, helps in the right places every single time. He's 6'6" and is a 45% three-point shooter through his first four games, and I think he's a real shooter. So, yeah, everything about the Chris Duarte's experience is going, I think, at the peak level that either of us thought that it could. But, like, neither of us are surprised that he's having success as a rookie, right?
I'm not, and so kind of two tweets I have on him, and I swear, for people that follow me, I tweet more than just about Chris Duarte, Josh Primo, and Franz Wagner, I promise. But two of the Chris Duarte callouts I had was, for his age, it was the comparison I made is like, he's a luxury car with 50,000 miles on it, but it's still like a Mercedes-Benz. It's not like you have some run-of-the-mill car. Like, we knew it was still going to perform. How high his ceiling is, and for contract 2 and 3, I don't know, but it's production right here and right now. The 13th pick feels like the right place to make that gamble. We're not saying on this podcast should have went 5th, like everyone blew it. No, there's reservations that are going to be on his age, and that's warranted. But for Indiana to say that's our guy at 13, he's going to come in and contribute right away, we'll figure it out 6 years down the road when he's 30 years old. But we're happy with the pick. And then it's you contrast it with it, and I wrote about this earlier today. Josh Primo was picked 12th. He was the youngest player in the draft, and he's going to the G League to get reps. Where is he at in five years? He could surpass Chris Duarte, and Chris Duarte could have had his moment in the sun for 2 or 3 years, and Josh Primo could be building on the great preseason and summer league he had, where he had 15 to 18 points. Everybody said the kid is unbelievable, but they're kind of going opposite directions right now. They're going to both intersect, but it'll be something to watch and talk about as time wears on.
Is there any person you love talking about more than Josh Primo?
I have to mention him. It's part of my contract with the Game Theory podcast, each one. I can't leave him out.
Contractually.
I wrote that today, and somebody, I forget who it was, responded on Twitter and said, are you cashing in your tickets to leader of the Josh Primo bandwagon? I said, absolutely not. That's a futures ticket. I'll look at that one about 3 years, but I'm still on the bandwagon. Still Team Primo forever.
Yeah, you would never cash
never.
In that
never.
Gotta cash
hold on
in that
one.
Ticket, I feel like. Let's go to the Magic, the team I'm watching right now, because I find what they've done so far with their rookies to be interesting. Franz Wagner has definitely been better than Jalen Suggs. Suggs has a lot more on his plate Wagner is in every way just a very he makes the simple decision every time, and it's the right decision. And all he has to do is make these reversal passes and hit cutters and hit three-pointers and make cuts himself. And it's a very simplified role, and it's a role that's suited him exceedingly well so far for Orlando.
And it's why I love the pick, because you had Jalen Suggs, and you the type of wing that Orlando has was versatile, but not as like more basketball well-rounded. And with Wagner, he wasn't great in the preseason. He wasn't great in summer league. There are a couple flashes, and everyone was so quick to judge him that the game was too fast or too physical. He can't play the way he did at Michigan. And I just had a hunch that once there was actual structure, NBA games, even when a lot of NBA offensive sets are still based on reads, that his ability was going to shine through. And that offensive processing that you talked about does show through when, like Suggs, the game just like slows down a little bit and his shot looks better. I just did a video on that. Like, you look at Michigan, he'd catch the ball from three and kind of hesitate. He's only shooting like 35% right now, but it's a lot smoother. He believes in it. He was 4 for 5 the other night against the Knicks. So it's like someone told him, hey, you got to shoot. And he's catching in transition and pulling without hesitating. I still like him at his best as a secondary attacker when the ball is swung. Like that Miami game that I think you watched too is in the first half. It was reversed. He caught it. He went middle. One dribble for like a short running baby right hook. And that's who he is. He just kills you when you least expect it. So I really like him. He's always in the right spots on defense too. He's kind of just the player that I thought he would be, and the role has worked out better than I thought it would based on kind of what the preseason looked like.
And then on the other side, I think Jalen Suggs has probably been the most harmful rookie to winning so far.
That's a headline.
Yeah, you and I love Jalen Suggs, and we're both very in on Jalen Suggs long term, I think. Like, there's no no hesitation there. Like, we're both very in. And from what I've seen, there's every reason to still be in on Jalen Suggs. It's just a matter of a few things right now. A, we knew the shooting was going to be like, not like a significant question early, but it was going to be a problem
early
as he continued to develop and grow. Second, his handle is not as tight as what it needs to be at the moment. And I remember against Miami, there was a stretch where he like had it cleared out on the side against Dwayne Dedmon in like the mid post area. And Dwayne Dedmon just like stripped him. Like, he put the ball on the ground once and Dwayne Dedmon stripped him. And that's concerning when Dwayne Dedmon can just rip you as someone who was the number 5 overall pick, who is a lead ball handler. Having said that, what I have been most, not even concerned with, but the reason I think he's struggled the most so far is just with the speed of the game and recognizing how, I guess the way to put it is how locked in you have to be at every single moment.
Yes.
He makes a lot of just really poor mistakes. A lot of like, oh, I just like kind of, you know, mistimed this lob because I was 10% less locked in than I needed to be, right? Like, he threw a lob, I can't remember if it was against the Knicks or against the Heat, where it was an easy lob to make and it looked like he just short-armed it, and it was not a good play. It was a bad play. He turned it over and it should have been 2 points, but instead it was 0 points. And the ball went the other way. And honestly, it turned into -2 points, if I remember correctly, for Orlando. What I think he needs to do is just like lock in a little bit more. You've seen some real flashes of high level passing ability on the move when he's driving. You've seen some flashes of very high level defensive ability. He just needs to understand he needs to have that level of like locked in play at every single moment he's on the court. Otherwise, it's just not going to work for him right now.
I see the same. I think part of it's just getting his sea legs under him too. And in a summer league, and I don't want to make this like sound disrespectful to summer league in the preseason, he could just play so fast and sort of overpower his opponents. And a lot of that can be like glorified pickup type settings. And in the NBA and in real games now, it's playing with different gears, and you're not always going to be in fifth. And then when he's playing this as Cole Anthony, he gets excited sometimes when the ball comes his way that he rushes to get a shot off. So he's doing this thing now where he's searching for fouls in the lane and flailing. You're not getting that whistle in the NBA as a rookie. You're not. And he did that a lot on the grassroots circuit in the first game or two in Gonzaga. And then he really reeled it back in and said, I'm not going to be able to score like this. And it was more attacking pick and roll, powering through at the rim, waiting for swings, and then kind of attacking off a shifting defense. I think that increased speed and forcing it contributes to some of his turnover stuff too. It's still consistent with the 4.5 to 3 rate that he had with Gonzaga. The shot's going to get better. He's getting really clean looks out of like high ball screens. Just some of them are short armed, and some of them just kind of like, I don't know if it's not being locked in, sail off a little bit. He had that one bounce back the other night where he was 4-for-8 from three. So I don't want to make this a complete negative fest. He competes. He really gets after on defense, too. He's disruptive on and off the ball. He clearly cares out there to a detriment at times. He's going to get his minutes despite the depth in that backcourt. He just needs to tighten it all up. Real in the craziness, real in the turnovers. He's playing better tonight. We were talking about it before we recorded here. So I'm not jumping ship on him either. He's still the guy that I keep at two, despite the success of Evan Mobley and Scotty Barnes. Just it's going to take more than 4 or 5 games for him to really figure it out.
Yeah, and as we say this, he goes and turns the ball over on like a nice little dribble handoff that should have led to like a very easy lob to Wendell Carter, because part of his problem right now is he doesn't know how to shift gears.
Yes.
He literally, like, all he had to do here was get the defender, the ball screen defender, on his hip, slow down a touch, keep the ball low on a crossover, and just wait for that help defender to come, and he would have had a very easy lob to Wendell Carter. And he just didn't have the ability to stop and have the patience to do that right now. So that's where we're at on him. It's going to be a process. He is being asked to do a lot for this team. I mean, he just like locked up Gordon Hayward on this next possession as I'm watching. And he's defending tough assignments most nights. And that is very impressive, but it's definitely going to be a process given the amount that he has on his plate.
Yeah, with a younger team and a younger roster, too. And he doesn't have the, say, comfort more than convenience.
Yeah, this team, by the way, this team is averaging 21 years old in their starting lineup right now. It's a mess.
Yeah.
They're a mess on defense. They're a mess on offense. They don't have a ton implemented, seemingly, in terms of what they're running. Like, not a ton of complicated action. A lot of it is just like, they've implemented more over the course of these 5 games. Like, they're running more dribble handoff, like getting the bigs out in motion stuff out on the perimeter, which is really good. And I think it's led to easier opportunities, for instance, for Wendell Carter tonight, who has 20 points and 9 rebounds as we talk. But this is not a great situation. Like, Scotty Barnes is probably in like the optimal situation right now in Toronto. Jalen Suggs is probably in like the lowest possible situation in Orlando right now, because he's playing with two bigs on the court a lot of the time. He's playing some minutes with RJ Hampton, who has not been very good. He's playing some minutes with Cole Anthony, who's hit or miss depending on the night. Orlando is not a very good team right now. Let's just leave it at that.
No, you phrased it correctly and framed it correctly, that if we're in the alternate universe where Jalen Suggs did go to Toronto and Scotty Barnes did go to Orlando, as I tweeted incorrectly at one point, I think it wouldn't be an A to B switch kind of like that, but I think Jalen might be a little bit better with some of the pieces around him, and Scotty would still be fine, but I don't know if we'd be talking about him as being effective with that, because there wouldn't be as much on his plate. More for Scotty.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, Orlando would have taken him, I think, and I think he'd probably be coming off the bench right now, because I would bet you they would still start Franz Wagner.
Do they draft Wagner, though?
They take him. Well, they desperately need the shooting.
Yeah.
They would need to start maybe Terrence Ross then.
Right, because Wagner has
because they would desperately the need too, the shooting.
Right, because that was kind of that's been the hold up of Franz. He does everything, but doesn't shoot it. The shot looks better. I mean, Scotty was 27% from Florida State. You can draft both of those, but then you really need a floor spacer. And Cole Anthony's not that guy, and RJ Hampton really hasn't been that guy. So you need a shooter out there. You know, Wendell Carter's not that guy.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Let's go to Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün as well. But let's go to Jalen Green. And God, Miles Bridges is so good.
Sidebar.
So good. Yeah, sidebar. Miles Bridges is a legit, like, star NBA player, I'm pretty sure. Like, that's where we're at.
We like it.
Jalen Green has had one good game, three not so great games, I think is the best way to put it. Has a 30-point explosion against Matt Penny's Boston Celtics.
Yeah, 22nd timeout. Can rookies stop playing so well against the Celtics? Like Jalen Green, career night, Scotty Barnes, career night. There's a pattern. We're figuring out here in Boston, but let's slow down the rookies a little bit here.
Yeah, it's a little bit tough. Yeah, not 9 points against Minnesota, 9 points against Oklahoma City, 10 points against Dallas, 30 against Boston. 14, 11, 18, 16 field goal attempts in those games. The problem also has been in three of those four games, he has not shot well. 1 of 6, 1 of 5. 2 of 9 from three. He had 8 of 10 from three against Boston. Of course he yes. did. This is kind of going the way that you and I thought it would. Like there will be these crazy explosive performances. It's frankly going like kind of similar to the G League, just at a higher level because the NBA is a tougher league. He's going to have these crazy explosive games where he looks like a future all-star against Boston, and he's going to have these games where he struggles, like he did against Dallas, for instance. It's going to be real hit or miss for Jalen Green, and that's okay. He just needs to keep rounding out the rest of his game in a substantial way.
Yeah, he's never lacked confidence, and we knew that throughout Grassroots and the G League Ignite. Brian Shaw, who's head coach, said he had that it factor. He carries himself like he belongs out there. In that Celtics game that, yes, I was watching, unfortunately, he finished with 8 threes. I think he had 6 in the first half, and he made them in a variety of ways, too. It wasn't him camping out in the corner and having other people create. He was coming off screens. He was pulling up. He was knocking down a transition. And then he'll have that flash of like that crazy finish where he pushes the ball ahead going left and contorts his body at the rim. And you just want him to be a little bit more yep. efficient. You want more of those nights where he's 11 for 18 and not 4 for 16 and not trading shot for shot with Kevin Porter Jr. And then my last Celtics zone here is not a slight but kind of a call out. He guarded Jason Tatum and they stood next to each other. And he looked small physically, and part of his game, the expansion of that and the finishing above just jumping over guys when there's a slow defender, is being able to finish with a guy on your hip. Tatum really committed himself to the gym and the weight room, and you can tell how his body transformed. Then if and when Jalen does that, it could be close to game over as long as he's not taking all these wild shots, because that vertical pop and bounce will get him buckets. And the criticism with the drives for now, unless the lane's open and guys are slow to recover, he's just bumped off his path a lot. And that's why I think some of these lower percentage shots are coming, because he's forcing for these short little fadeaways because he's trying to get a shot off.
Yeah, I think that's a really apt way to kind of phrase it. I think that's a really, really smart way to think about it. Defensively, like, it's just going to be a process. I mean, there's just not another way to put it. This Rockets team is not very good on defense right now. I don't know that we need to dive heavy into the Houston Rockets defense
no.
at this point, because it's just not very good.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Alperen Şengün, any thoughts? Like, he's
solid.
I think the creativity as a passer
yep.
has been really interesting at times.
Yeah, and also kind of steals number, 9 steals in 4 games. I think it's kind of nuts, and I like his timing on the glass. He does have that, like, sneaky Euro way of carving out space up the lane with those, like, little nudges or pushes. And there's adjustments that he needs to make, and guarding against like Al Horford, like even Al Horford's athleticism gave him fits at times, which is sort of a wild statement to make in 2021. And with all due respect to Al Horford, the shooting, we saw like a little bit overseas that the shot was coming around. Like, it's not there. He was 1-for-5 in his first three games from three. The Celtics were switching that high ball screen and just had no fear of him scoring from the perimeter at all. And when he's pulled from there, his man was helping a little bit on drives and leaving him naked. And one play against Oklahoma City, he put on the deck and picked up a charge. So he's just going to have to adjust more. People got really excited when he had the opening night in the summer league. I'm not super worried yet with him either about the scoring, because when Jalen Green has 30 and Kevin Porter Jr. is chasing him, bigs are kind of like the odd man out, and that's not really his fault, but it's got to see more.
Yeah, it's nice to see him in the rotation. I would like to see where he falls on defense a little bit more. Really good instincts. Like you said, like he is getting his hand on the ball often. I need to see more in terms of his ability to move in space at this point. I think that that's the concern. Okay. Let's take another quick commercial break, and then we'll kind of finish up with some thoughts on like the Josh Giddey and Jeremiah Robinson Earls, the Davion Mitchells and Herb Joneses on defense, just some of that excitement. Okay, we're back. Let's go to the Thunder guys, because God knows the Thunder fans are probably very upset that we have waited this long to talk about Josh Giddey. I've loved him. I've thought he's been everything that they could have hoped for. It's a significant problem on defense for him right now, but that's okay. He's in the right spots. He's just struggling to defend on the ball at this point. That's fine. It's whatever, because at the end of the day, he's shooting the ball really well. I would like to see him be a little bit more aggressive getting to the three-point shot whenever he's playing off the ball next to Shea. I think that there's a real ability for him to potentially take more threes. But he's not there yet, and maybe the confidence isn't there yet for a reason, right? The passing is just unbelievable. Oh, yeah. Like, he's just such an unreal passer. Yeah. And the way that he thinks the game and transition and processes the game is unbelievable.
Yeah, the court sense, and even though his pick-and-roll numbers statistically have been great, you see the creativity and his passes over the top. Just want him to have a little bit more of a finishing package. The floater is nice, but it's not always going to be the most efficient shot. I mean, I know he's big, so it allows him to finish over smaller guards, but he does seem to settle for that when the defense rotates, because he knows he's not finishing through them right now based on his size. I do think also he's most efficient coming off screens. That's not something that we're surprised by based on where he's at last year. And I like the way Oklahoma City had him kind of play away from the ball, and he came off a double screen, he caught, and then he's able to slice like a scrambling defense more so than you have at the top of the key. Everyone's set. Like, he's never going to have that Russell Westbrook just pop to beat a guy then react off of that. I like him making reads amidst the chaos of everything, and I praised him earlier that he's rebounded the ball really well. And at 19 years old, there's a lot to be excited about. Had that monster 19 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists game that had probably inflated his numbers a little bit. And that's sort of my one semi-question I had for you when prepping here, is that Oklahoma City is, we'll put it politely, and they're aiming to stockpile picks, right, and assets, and even potentially tanking, if you'd phrase it that, term it that. Are we worried at all about sort of his stats going to be super padded with, they're just able to give him 30 minutes a night if they want, and then the numbers are going to come back to earth once they try to start, you know, really focused on winning games and bringing in some veterans to the mix?
Look, that'll probably happen. Or should I stop being a hater to some extent?
And just enjoy the Australian Wonder Kid show?
Well, what I think we've seen from him so far is very similar to Tyrese Halliburton last year in a lot of ways, where he makes the right decision so often. He has a 3-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. Halliburton's probably a better shooter than what he is. I would like to see Josh just take more threes, but it's a similar deal in terms of the high level processing ability, where he is very, very capable of grabbing and going in transition, making the right read, playing as like a point guard or off the ball at times next to Shea, and making decisions at a really high level. And I think that's probably enough. Like, I think that Oklahoma City can get everything it needs out of taking him at sixth overall if that's what they get.
Right.
Right? Right. Like, they're going to be happy with that. And I don't, yeah, you're probably right that, you know, by year two, when they're still bad, the numbers will probably be higher. Like, he'll probably be averaging, you know, 14 points and 6 assists per game or something. And then maybe when they start to get good, then they'll come crashing down to 10 points and 5 assists a game. But it doesn't matter, because he'll be as effective. It'll just be a different role. Like, I think that, again, this is the kind of player that is a winning player regardless of the role. And Max Strus just made a shot, so I'm excited.
I like Giddey playing through his mistakes and just being thrown to the fire too. Yeah. Just for the record, like, I don't want him to be on the bench. You're 19. You know, Oklahoma City's 0-4 right now. I don't know if they're playing right now. That's fine. You're going to lose. Like, just lose and get your kid some experience.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Just let them play through the pain, like Jalen Suggs is doing right now as well. Like, I think it's a smart decision for Oklahoma City, and I think they'll reap the rewards later. Another guy that's playing for them is Jeremiah Robinson Earl, and he's playing real minutes for them right now. This is a guy that I definitely had in the first round. Did you have him as a first rounder last year?
I think I had him like 28. I have to pull it up, but if I didn't have him in the first, it was like 32. It wasn't past, I think, where he was drafted. I have to pull it up, but he was right there for me. I want to say 28 or 29.
Yeah, he's making shots from the perimeter. He's making the right read regularly again. Provides some real physicality inside. He just looks like a really high-level rotation player long-term.
Yeah, really smart player in terms of spatial awareness and rotating and moving to the right spot. Almost staying out of the way until he's needed, and that needs to be his role, and then he'll make you pay when he has a chance to do so. But he isn't going to pout or be in the wrong places when he isn't has to be there. And he said, like you said, hitting open shots, is 6-for-11 from three. He's attacking off the bounce better from the perimeter than I thought he would. At Villanova, when he'd attack, would kind of be like one dribble, then he'd turn his back and kind of back down his man. It's much more fluid on the rip-throughs and drives, but I'm not... again, I'm not trying to do this revisionist history thing now where I say he should have went 15th, but I'm not surprised either that he's starting and being a contributing guy. And you know, Mark Dagnold said some quote about him the other day that he comes every day ready to work. He brings, I don't know, he said work boots or hard hat. It was some construction metaphor that he made. But like that's who Jeremiah has always been throughout grassroots and college. So people around him aren't really shocked about what he's doing right now.
I've just got to share a John Rothstein tweet with you, because for people, I think we may, I don't know if we've talked about this in the podcast before. Penny is friends with Rothstein. I just don't know John like that at all. Rothstein tweeted, "Used to feel guilty when I was preoccupied with college hoops on Thanksgiving and couldn't truly visit with family. Not anymore. You can cook a turkey anytime, but there's only so many chances for Richmond to play a team like Maryland on a neutral court."
He knows what he's doing. I don't know how to say in more words that, like, this is real to him, damn it. It's like the kid in the pro wrestling show that had the interview and somebody says fake, it's still real to me, damn it. That's John. He's unapologetically who he is. He's obsessed with college basketball. It's not a bit. Like, sure, he played out in his head and he wants to share his college basketball brand with the world, and this is how he does it, 120-ish characters at a time. You started that tweet, I had no idea where you're going, and then as soon as you said like Richmond, I'm like, this is going to be some neutral court BS. Like, I know it is.
Oh my god.
But hey, the thing about John is, man, can't knock his work. He's been to like 30 plus campuses already this year in practices, so the guy puts it in. He is obsessed.
I love it. I love it. I've come totally around on Rothstein. I really have. Like, I used to kind of like not be a fan of it, but you can't help but laugh. Like, that's the thing. Like, I used to not be able to tell if he's in on the joke or not, but like, he's definitely in on the joke at this point. It's great.
He gets it.
Okay. Let's go to Davion Mitchell, who I have so thoroughly enjoyed. He like scored like a point and a half in his first like three games for the Kings, and then the most recent game was great offensively, but God, his defense is awesome. It's so good.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, the highlights made the rounds of him shutting down Donovan Mitchell on multiple possessions, and then he chased around Steph Curry for a night, and he worked so hard to fight over and through those screens. I wrote down the quote that Curry said is, you could definitely tell he has all the tools in the kit to be a defensive stopper. Just stay a pest out there in the best of ways. I mean, Steph Curry's still at 27 because that's what Steph Curry does, and we knew the defense would translate. Was sort of worried if the offense didn't, would he be like sort of more Javon Carter-y than Marcus Smarty? The best thing I'd say offensively, and what Jalen Suggs should probably tone up on is just the change of speeds in the half court and in transition when he has the ball in his hands. He knows how to put his man in jail when he beats him and uses that hang dribble. And then when Golden State went zone, he was really good on the catch and rip through to kind of make the defense step up and commit, and then he would spray to shooters. Steph Curry actually guarded him well, and which is a weird thing because you don't always give the credit for Curry as a defender. But yeah, it was one game of scoring. The other two are 2 points and 3 points, something like that. I don't know the other game, what it was from there. But he's a guy that really uses his defense to fuel his offense and not vice versa, which can be rare at the professional level. And then he's even used as a closer in, I think, the second game instead of Tyrese Halliburton. So that staff and obviously that franchise respects what he does and how much his defense can be a game changer, especially down the stretch.
Yeah, he's playing almost 30 minutes a night, like, and doing so really well. He's making really, really good decisions. Like, they have him in like a semi-limited role offensively, and using all of his energy on defense. But a 4-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. He's been very, very smart with the way that he has handled the ball thus far in his career. Just very impressive. I'm very, very impressed with the way the defense has translated. You and I both thought he was the best on-ball defender in this class, and that has not changed. That will not change. He is he is exceptional. He will be an all-defense team member. And the offense, you know, he needs to shoot the ball and needs to keep shooting in the way that he did in Game 3. But nonetheless, as long as that comes, he's going to be a really high-level contributor for the Kings. And the other thing I do want to note is just something I mentioned on the previous podcast. Like, I want to say it again. Like, he has really, really – it feels like he and, like, Tristan Thompson and they're harder to play against now because of him in large part. Like, they are miserable to play against. And that hasn't been the case with the Kings for a long time. They're just really, really tough and physical and strong. And De'Aaron Fox has gotten stronger, obviously. And like Harrison Barnes is physical. And you know, Alex Len's like a big dude in there. And Rashawn Holmes isn't afraid to like play physically. I mean, this is a team where like the Davion Mitchell pick like kind of did really work toward transforming their culture as an organization.
We were both I was anyway, I won't speak for you. I was surprised by the pick, but when you see kind of what they want to do and go this direction and have him be this culture carrier of toughness and defense and winning, that made more sense. I mean, I know that's analytics people are probably punching the wall right now saying like, how can you say that when the numbers say to draft this other guy? But if that was their intention, then it sort of started to pan out. It is early, but I think they're 1-2. Let's not get crazy ahead of ourselves, but it's so far so good for him anyway.
Yep, totally. Herb Jones? Herb Jones is starting for New Orleans because his defense is so good. That's great to see.
Yeah, he's that's the game on behind me. He's chasing around Trae Young. He's doing the Herb Jones show. He's rebounding and switching. Is this like rotational Swiss Army knife of roles to run the floor on the break on offense, slash on ball reversals, but defense to keep him out there?
I'm Trying to think, like, is there any other rookie that we really need to dive into here, you think?
Just worth mentioning, Trey Murphy on the same team. He's playing 20 minutes a night. It's not quite the offensive fireworks like he had in the summer league in the preseason. In preseason, I looked earlier, he had double-digit shots every night, and he could kind of, like, hunt more for those. The regular season, he takes 5 to 6 shots in the flow of the offense. He was, like, 7 for 17 from 3 and 1 for 4 on twos. He's this one-trick pony as a floor spacer in the corners, but he hit, whatever, 39-40%. You can do that. So he's making the most of his role there. The other guy, Austin Reeves, Hillbilly Kobe for the Lakers. We both
Hillbilly Kobe.
It's the best nickname going. It's not discussed enough, but we both felt good about this one draft night. Both had in the 40s and only played a couple of games, but just been solid. Doesn't hurt you. He was 5 for 7 from the field with no turnovers, 12 minutes in one game, and then I think 17 minutes the other. But 30 minutes against the Spurs the other night, 10 points on 3 for 5 shooting. Undrafted. Didn't make a lot of sense for us, and I think the situation has panned out to his favor.
Yeah, no, it's like a no doubt, like, Austin Reeves is an NBA player, I think. I had him in the 30s. I was even higher than you were. I just think he's really smart and plays well within a scheme, and it's not an accident that the Lakers are better when he's on the court because he doesn't try to do too much. Like, they have guys out there that just do a lot. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
they do. It's a good way
obviously,
to
like, it. Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, like, those guys do a lot. But, like, Carmelo Anthony does a lot. Dwight Howard, when he's out there, like, he's extra. He does a lot.
There's a lot of personality.
Kent Bazemore. Yeah, like, Kent Bazemore does a lot when he's out there. Malik Monk takes a lot of shots when he's out there. Rajon Rondo handles the ball a lot. Being able to just play off ball and make smart decisions and play within the flow, like, that's super valuable. And he has absolutely shown the ability to do that thus far in his career.
Yeah, just to be comfortable in your own skin. And just the role he had in college was the inverse of that. He was getting to the free throw line and being a shot creator and being this offensive spark plug, and to reel his game back in and do it within the lane of playing for the Lakers is something to be said.
Yeah, I love it. I've absolutely loved it so far. Any other, I mean, we have the Zaire Williams, Moses Moody group that are like at the bottom end of their rotations, which is like fine.
Was Moody
Moses Moody, I think, is
G League, right?
Just been a little bit more effective, but
he's got assigned. Somebody's got assigned to the G League. Bones Highland, similar situation. He's only played one game, and when he did, he had 7 points. Really good in the preseason. Oh, Sandro Mamukelashvili, he's had some moments.
Sandro has definitely played a little bit. Jared Butler has played occasionally for Utah. We mentioned Banton earlier. He's been okay in some moments. And then obviously we're waiting for Cade. And I'm sure that when Cade plays his first game, we'll have a discussion of Cade. But that just unfortunately hasn't happened yet.
No. And the fact that we're able to still talk positively for an hour 15 on contributing rookies, it does show how deep the class was. And I was most excited about the top of the draft, and we talked about it for 2 years, and then it was like, do we overshoot it? Do we oversell it? And it doesn't look like it was. And then you have those surprises of guys who are starting drafted in the 40s and undrafted. People are going crazy saying, how good is this draft? And comparatively speaking to other ones, it's still been 5 games, guys. Relax. We're not as over the moon yet, but it's heading the right way, which I like to see.
All right, Penny, give me some movies. It's been 2 weeks. You have to have seen some stuff,
well,
right?
I'm also watching NBA games that just started. I finished Below Deck, which I'm sure you'll be proud of me. That season ended. I watched, I didn't see it during award season, so I watched Hacks, which I'm sure you've seen.
I have not seen Hacks
really?
Yet, actually.
Yeah,
it's just kind of a dead
it
zone
plows
for
through.
Me.
It's kind of semi-based on Joan Rivers and Vegas. We like it. It was lighthearted fare. And then I watched the first episode of You, season 3. It's going to be a a process there. I really liked the first season. The second season was like, eh, maybe. The third, it was like, gosh, I don't know. What am I getting myself into?
Penny, come on, man. Have some self-respect.
Part of it is like, I already feel pot committed. When it's two seasons of something, it's hard to just like cut bait. You got to give it like a little bit of life. Maybe not. This might be the end of this life. But more importantly, seeing that you have four screens, unlimited time, and have not left your house, what have you seen in your movie watching time here?
I mean, there's really only one like important thing that I've seen. Have you seen Dune?
I knew you were going to say that. No, I have not.
It's so good. It's like a what the fuck am I watching watch. I don't know how it wasn't the most expensive movie ever made. Just the sheer scope and enormity of the entire thing, and you'll understand what I mean when you watch it. It is one of the best looking movies I've ever seen in my life. It was really good. It was an incredibly effective movie. I thought it was awesome. I really truly enjoyed it a lot. But yeah, it was it's a staggering achievement from Denis Villeneuve.
Have you done Squid Game yet or no?
No, I haven't.
So you haven't done Squid Game, and you're just like scrolling through NBA Twitter and not knowing what these 8 million memes mean.
Here's the thing. Like, I don't really scroll Twitter that much anymore.
Why? Yeah, don't you go be part of the community, see what people are talking about, what they're doing out there?
Like, I do, and like during games, like I'll see them, but I'm not as active as I once was.
Okay. Well,
on the Twitter.
I just felt like I jumped in because I didn't want to like miss some of those things. It's like, okay, I get the reference now. I'm going to see, I think opening night, they made a couple of them. And I'm like, I have to watch the last four episodes to know what's going on here.
I did watch another like totally batshit crazy movie.
Okay. Not surprised.
It won the Palme d'Or in Cannes. It is Titan. If you haven't seen this movie, I honestly don't want to say any more, because it's something that you should watch with as little information as possible going in.
Okay. I will look it up.
I'm not joking. It's one of the weirdest movies I've ever seen.
Oh, I saw the preview for this. I have not watched it. 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, so we got some work to do here, too.
Titan has 20%?
No. Let me rephrase. That was The Titan has 20% of Rotten Tomatoes. Not the same.
No. No, it's not.
What the heck are you talking about? How does this win an award? All right. It's in the hopper.
Let's
try again. 88% of Rotten Tomatoes is no longer 20. We have fixed the reviews here in real time. A body horror film written and directed. Okay, this is Sam Vecenie 101 in French.
It won Cannes. Like
crimes. I'm not going to read any more. Okay, just because I will watch it.
Yeah, no, seriously.
I won't. So Father and Son.
Do not find out. Yeah, you're going to watch this movie and you're going to be like, what is happening right now?
I got to be in the right headspace for that.
Like, you're going to text me. Yeah, you're going to text me and be like, what did I just get myself into?
Sounds right.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's about all I've got. I'm excited, Penny, because movie theaters open this weekend here in Australia. And I will be going to see your best friends, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck.
Very psyched up about this.
I am. I think it's going to be great. I think it looks like perfectly silly.
Yeah, I can't. What is it? The last duel?
The last duel. Yeah.
Yeah. I always timepieces are always tough for me to get into.
Yeah, I can see that for you.
I need Boston bank robberies, not duels on horseback.
Yeah, we need to get We need to get Affleck to direct Damon in, like, the town, too.
It can happen. I mean, there was, like, the whatever anniversary is another bank robber in Charlestown. It's like, we're doing this again, but it hasn't added on since then. I think it was just one bank was robbed in memoriam of the movie actually being released so many years ago. We're a special kind of twisted out here in Boston.
It's my favorite thing in the world. I love it so much. Okay, Penny, tell the people where they can find your work.
I'm on Twitter, Matt_Penny. I guess I'm a semi-NBA guy now, but college basketball starts in 10 days, 14, 10 days or so. So it's there'll be a lot of stuff coming up here soon.
Yeah, I'm really excited for college basketball to start. We're going to do some draft stuff, probably for Champions Classic. We'll probably do like that evening. We might record something. Maybe talk a little bit about that. But until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.